Hey Ding Dongs, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
And this is another bonus episode of Explain It to Jamie. Now Jamie, yes Jamie, why is the title of this on the picture, Double Dip? I've never seen it before. Is this a new type of episode?
No, Jamie.
Thank you for asking. It's the old clarification episode. We've just undergone some strict and energetic rebranding.
That's right.
Our producers got us on the phone. They said, listen, we think clarification implies too much negativity, maybe sets up the expectation that we are making mistakes.
That's right.
And that is not the standard to which we hold ourselves.
Our plan A is that we're going to be perfect. And we won't ever need to clarify anything. But if the freak occurrence occurs that we do need to go back to a topic, we'll just double dip it. We'll just take that topic, dip it right back in the podcast sauce.
That's right.
And take another juicy bite of that sweet topic.
A social faux pas has turned a political podcast must this week. We're growing as we do. Things are changing. It's exciting. Welcome to Double Dip.
That's right. We rebranded just like ISIS.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's right. And keep an eye out for our Explain It to Jamie newsletter, where we talk a lot about the people we've been oppressing and beheading. And all of the
great success this week.
Yeah, the actual Explain It to Jamie newsletter would be just as horrifying as the ISIS newsletter, only because I don't think people would want to know what we actually get up to in our spare time.
Yeah.
It's like, yep, I ate jerk chicken 7 times again this week.
Yeah, he literally did nothing from between the last time he recorded this podcast and to this time.
Jamie stared at a wall. When I walked into the room today, he had 3 feet of dust on him.
Yeah, I figured if it's good enough for Stephen Harper, it's good enough for me. That is a deep pull.
Oh, he felt that.
From a past
he
episode.
He felt that wherever he is.
So this week, for our Double Dip, amazing, cool name.
Is there like a sound effect? Should I aggressively dip a chicken nugget into some sauce right?
Yeah. If we could use like a wet slap of some unnameable food hitting a wetter, more viscous,
less nameable sauce.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Anyway.
So this week we are clarifying a little bit about Obamacare.
That's right. We have some updates. That's part of it too, is that these are real news issues, so sometimes stuff keeps happening and we want to talk about that stuff when we've covered it already on the podcast. So there's some updates to Obamacare and some clarifying and some clarifications on the ISIS episode. Spoiler alert, ISIS is really complicated. I got many things wrong. We'll get right into that.
Wow. Okay. Let's get into it.
Let's grab these topics and double dip them, Jamie.
Yucky, yucky, yucky. Okay, so where are we starting here? We'll probably start with Obamacare because that's the older episode.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? What did you want to
talk
about?
Well, the big news is, and this is not as such, it's a couple weeks old now, but we never haven't talked about it yet because, ironically, when we recorded our clarification episode about this episode, it was the day that this news broke, so we didn't manage to clarify it.
Right.
So the Republicans have proposed their alternative to Obamacare. It's called the American Health Care Act, the AHCA, which some people are trying to make Trump care happen, but it's kind of like that thing in Mean Girls where that girl tries to make the word fetch happen and nobody's having it.
Nobody's doing that.
Anyway, so the Republicans have unveiled their plan. It's really similar to the plan that was leaked, which I did talk about a little bit. So, but just to go over it, basically it takes away all the regulations that Obamacare put into place, and it takes away the new taxes that help to pay for Obamacare on certain kinds of corporations and stuff.
Did they get rid of my favorite part, the death panels?
In a way, the death panels you know and love, they may be disappearing, in the way that they currently exist. But let's just say the Republicans have some really fun ways about how we're all going to die that they're very excited to share with us in the coming years.
Okay.
I'm reading between the lines there.
Sure.
So it takes away all of the regulations. So you remember that one of the big revolutions was that insurance companies had a period of time called open enrollment where they weren't allowed to deny people for pre-existing conditions, and they weren't, and they had to offer a certain amount of stuff in a basic package. Like they had to cover a certain amount of things. That's
that
all
one's
gone.
Right out.
That's gone.
Right.
They're not doing that anymore. They're also getting rid of the Medicaid expansion.
Okay.
Right. But that doesn't take into
and Medicaid is for old people.
For poor people.
For poor people.
Yeah. But that doesn't come into effect until 2020. And they're also taking a lot of funding out of Medicaid, $90 billion, I think, a year for quite a while. It's like a $900 billion cut over a period of time to Medicaid. It's a big cut.
Okay.
And what they're replacing it with is a tax credit that you get if you make under $75,000 of about $2,000 a year.
Oof.
Right.
Right.
So remember that your premium in America will already be probably between $3,000 and $5,000 a year, and that's if you're us, right? If you're a young person.
So if you get if you have to go in and get your leg amputated, they're tell you what, guys, let us take care of the toes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
We'll get those toes off.
You know what? The toes? Those are on Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
The rest of that foot, though, we're coming for you, motherfucker. Give me your house. Yeah.
Better get selling your house.
Yeah, yeah. And in a way, this is generally thought to be Paul Ryan's big project. He's the, House congressional leader, right? He's the leader of the Republicans in Congress.
He's had a pretty big hard-on for getting rid of Obamacare.
Oh, yeah. It's like all that lets him freak anymore. Yeah. it's like he stares at his wife, who he feels no affection for, and he pictures the full text of his Obamacare repeal overlaid over her body, except it has human legs and sexy stockings on, and then he fucks that bill until it is shredded raw.
Right.
Guaranteed. In his mind. So it's been sort of a political disaster already. Mm-hmm. It's been a political disaster because a lot of Republicans didn't agree with giving poor people money to buy stuff, right?
Sure.
That's something philosophically they don't agree with, which...
We've all known that for a while.
Yeah, that's right.
I want to ask, sorry to interrupt you. I think one of the impressions I got from sort of watching all this unfold is I was like, I wonder if there's so much pressure for them to unveil their thing that Trump was like, I don't care what shape it's in, let it out now, because it seems like they have no numbers for it or anything like that.
They're trying desperately to ignore all the numbers too, because the Congressional Budget Office came out with the numbers of how much exactly money was going to come out of all these programs, and they're like, well, maybe that's not a good use of the Congressional Budget Office's time, was their response. And the Congressional Budget Office was like, this is our job. this is the point of what we do.
Yeah.
I don't think it came from Trump.
Okay.
I doubt it, because it's such a hot mess.
Yeah.
And
he's known for his perfection and
austere
nature.
I mean, I just don't see... if it came from Trump, that it was a way dumber move than any of his other dumber moves have been, because it's such a disaster. It's just so badly put together, and it's such a Paul Ryan project, right. What it's done is it's divided the Republicans against each other, right? Because some of them don't agree with giving people tax breaks to help them buy things if they're poor, right? Mm-hmm. So those people are furious, right? It's also made people in Trump counties and stuff like that, poor white counties especially, realize that they're about to lose their health care because of this. So now suddenly it's super on the radar for them. That's a big misstep. Mm. It's given the Democrats a lot of ammunition to attack them with, which is the risk of this whole thing.
Right.
And it's also just not a good system, right? That's the thing about it. It's not helping anything, right? Obamacare... They're hoping it's going to take down the costs of insurance, but it sort of is, and it's going to let them. They want it to let the market regulate the price of insurance, which we've already talked about why that's super dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, Obamacare was always about trying to get people who didn't have coverage, and this just undoes that. Those people aren't going to have coverage anymore. Again, it's about 15 to 20 million people are going to lose insurance again.
Yeah,
right. It's going to be. It's brutal and it's inhumane, and there's just no political discourse of that on the Republican side anymore, which is insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching last week tonight, and John Oliver was talking about how a baby was denied health insurance because it was like too fat, and so the parents like were like, we're trying to get our kid on this healthcare plan, and yeah, the doctor's like, I'm sorry, but your baby is like overweight, and he's like, well, like, should I put my baby on a diet, you know?
Yeah.
And like that sort of that aspect rings out to me of like, there's someone in an office somewhere that can look at that scenario and be like, I am not going to give that barely, like, just a human,
yeah,
you know, like only on this side of that chemical equation. They have had no experiences, no decisions, no anything.
I'm going to fuck them.
I'm going to take away their health care because it saves me money, and because of some technicality, I you know, I'm just holding too dear.
Well, and like, I think there are Republicans who honestly get off on the idea that they're punishing their parents for having a fat baby.
Right.
You know? Right. I think that there's honestly people who are like, if they were good parents, their baby wouldn't be fat. Right. I know, because my baby's not fat, and I did it, and I'm just the CEO of an oil company. Why can't these two assholes do it? You know what I mean? Like, that's like how these fucking ghouls think. You gotta be like, you gotta just be ready to confront that.
Right, right.
Anyway, that's unfolding. We'll see what happens with that, and we'll keep double dipping this thing all we need to in order
double
to
dip.
Its sweet knowledge nugget into your ear mouth.
Yeah.
That's a super well-crafted metaphor that took me a long time. Okay, moving on. Moving all the way on. I wanted to revisit a point that I made briefly in the Obamacare episode about the Canadian healthcare system, about the two-tier or like adding privatization into the Canadian system.
Uh-huh.
I mentioned my dad's point of view on it, but my dad finally listened to that episode and he texted me. He's like, Richard, you didn't get my points right. Let me call you and we'll tell you them, and then you can say them and they'll make sense. So
right.
I was like, okay, that's great. So basically my dad was more in favor of small amounts of privatization being added into our existing system in order to combat inefficiencies in the public system and to promote innovation in the system. My dad feels like in a fully subsidized single payer system, there's actually a lot of pressure against changing the way things are done because it's not about improving health.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not about creating the best healthcare. It's about making sure the system is stable.
Right.
And the system starts at the moment the system's created. That's great.
Mm.
20 years after the system's created, when things have been modernizing for 20 years, it can be really hard to introduce change into that system because people have a vested interest in keeping it the way that it is.
Right.
And my dad's example of this was that Canada has been very, very slow to adopt fully electronic medical records that you can be shared between provinces and things like that, right? Like, because of the system we had. So that's an example. My dad would thinks that there's ways for private clinics to, if there were ways private clinics could exist, and if they were protected from competing a lot with the public system, but they still existed, the quality of care at those private clinics with things like, you know, the newest this, the newest that, electronic medical records, whatever, would force the public system to keep up with them.
Right.
Kind of like the reverse of the Australian insurance system, right? It's like, in that case, there's like a main public insurance company that keeps the price low and everyone has to compete with that.
Right.
In this case, there could be a few smaller private things and the government would kind of have to keep up to them, right?
Mm.
Those private companies have an incentive to innovate because that's what makes them different from the government system.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of pull the government along. That's a vision my dad has of how this kind of thing could work.
Right, right. Okay,
He says there's also a problem because our system isn't running at full capacity. Like, our hospitals are not jam-packed completely full all the time. And especially for an example he gave was sometimes, like, surgery units operate all the time. And it's partly a budget thing. Like, the system can't afford to have them operating all the time.
Huh.
So there are surgeons who are only working a couple days a week, and they can't work privately.
Oh, yeah. What the... Because I got, what's it called? Something in my nose fixed. Deviated septa.
I was going to say the microchip that gives you orders from the government.
That's right. That's right.
Your septum was deviant? Was it like going out and stealing cars and
man, it was like
tagging
smoking
shit?
Cigarettes with like some septums that I was like, don't hang out with those septums.
You walked in on your septum in the basement and it was like, cut my life in two pieces.
This is my last resort.
It was like, get out of here, Jamie.
Yeah, leave me alone, Dad.
And you were like, just
nose dad.
Just coming to see if you guys need some nasal spray.
Shut up. Yeah, he's acting out.
Yeah.
But anyway, I had him surgically fixed. because he was being such a problem.
Yeah.
But the way they do it, for the anyone that's had surgery in this country, they'll be able to back me up, is they book you a thing months in advance. Like they're like, okay, on October 2nd of 2018, you're getting surgery. And you're going, okay, so write that in your calendar and wait however many months it is. And the doctor who's conducting the surgery, the reason they do that is they build it up. So it's like it's an elective surgery, so it's not an emergency.
That's right.
And so
they only have a couple slots for an elective surgery every
year. Yeah, and so they run through, I think the doctor said he did like 10 or 11 that day of the same surgery.
Right.
So, you know, you're just... Yeah, Henry Ford and the shit out of that.
Right.
You know?
And according to my father, anyway, and there's a lot of situations where those people aren't working every day.
Yeah.
Like, because if it's not their nose surgery day, they have to kind of chill. And if there were private clinics, you could get those people working and serve the public better.
Right.
My dad said he's not in favor of a private system, right? He's okay with people paying a little more money to access healthcare in a private system in order to force efficiency in the public system. But like, he said that these kinds of improvements aren't shown often in the metrics that they use, like the statistics they use to measure healthcare systems, like the average, you know, the like life expectancy won't change probably, but it's like your individual experience, like the customer experience, the like patient experience of going through healthcare, those are the kind of things that can be improved with the private sphere. That's what he sees anyway. Stuff like electronic medical records. It's not a hassle to transfer your medical records around and stuff like that. And those are the kinds of things that are frustrating him in the system that we have now.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's the American argument for put a little bit of capitalism into everything, right? Is that when you have the need to make something more efficient or better or whatever, like a way of injecting that need.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to let go of what we were talking about in that episode of like the trouble with capitalism is that it's like a deranged lunatic, you know, who eats money. And so like the lunatic will find a way to wreck your thing.
The market only accidentally provides for the public good.
Yeah.
It only does that by accident. It doesn't do that as a goal. Like, I feel like you can use, maybe there's, I think there, I'm not an economist obviously, but there are ways to use market forces to aid the public good, but the ratios are off in the West, I think. I think we need to aggressively box in the space that the forces of capitalism can operate, and then I think we'll have a stronger society.
Right.
I mean, this is one of those reverse time things, because we're recording this episode before we record our Universal Basic Income episode,
but
this episode's coming out after. So if you haven't, go back and listen to our UBI episode.
Cover all this shit.
Yeah, we're going to talk about all this shit. Jamie doesn't know it yet, but
I know.
It's coming.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Or I was excited.
Okay.
Or whatever time works.
Yeah.
However time goes.
Or we'll us
always
will be excited.
Never excited again.
We're in a
like
Sarah Rule play
was.
Now.
Yeah.
We're doing it. Now we're in a Sarah Rule play.
So onward to ISIS.
ISIS. Okay, guys. Weechi makes some boo-boos.
Yeah, it turns out that ISIS is actually just a small homie carnival on the St. Lawrence River.
It's true.
A 45-minute drive from Ottawa.
Yeah.
ISIS land.
Which is why I regret, you know. No, I'm not. I'm gonna cut this joke out. I was gonna make a horrible joke.
No, I had to keep it.
No,
what's the joke?
I was gonna say, which is why I regret driving there and machine gunning 15 people, screaming ISIS is bad.
My God.
screaming yeah. down with ISIS, but you know.
We're keeping this whole
section. No, no, don't make me do it.
We have to.
Oh, it's a bad joke. I feel bad about it already.
Yeah, well, we can hear from your tone that you feel bad. Okay, but it's good fucking radio, baby. Hey.
Okay, so I just, you know, the nature of the beast with the situation in the Middle East, and I'm not an expert on it, means I just muddled some details.
Right.
And there were some things, some questions that got asked that because I wasn't 100% sure, we didn't tackle head on. So I'm just going to tackle some of those questions head on and really explain them.
Right.
First question. Tom asked about Sharia law and what it is and if it's Sharia law itself that is violent or if it's ISIS's interpretation of it that's violent.
Right.
The answer is Sharia law is like a system of like laws for civil society that was derived from Islamic texts and like the thought of Islamic scholars in the like Middle Ages.
Right.
And is quite oppressive and violent. Like those are the tenets of Sharia law. You don't have to believe and want Sharia law to practice Islam, but there are branches of Islam that do practice it, and it does advocate violent punishments and, you know, extreme modesty and not, you know, imbalance in the sexes and things like that. Those things are all true.
Yeah.
Now, it's not, Sharia law doesn't rule Dearborn, Michigan, as is like a popular conspiracy theory, and the extent to which we're in danger of being under Sharia law in the West is not, is vastly over exaggerated, but it's horrible. I don't want it. It's bad.
Yeah.
Get it out of here. You know, and Islamic State does believe in it. Now, on top of that, Islamic State also appears to be extremely creative about with their horrible brutality. And so I think they are like uniquely demonic butchers.
Yep.
But like, yes, Sharia law does advocate violent punishment and things like that in inside of its tenets. So that's one. Check. Second, okay, I said there were like 500 soldiers in Mosul and there were supposed to be 25,000. I was just confused.
Right.
There were 10,000 soldiers in Mosul. There were supposed to be 25,000.
Oh, okay.
There were there were 500 soldiers in the 3rd Division of the Iraqi Army, which was the first line of defense for Mosul, and there were supposed to be 2,500 of those soldiers.
Oh,
so like I so the numbers were all real numbers. I just skipped a step in putting them all together. So
I mean, either way, they're like vast, like that's still
it's like a third.
Way
yeah,
too
it's like
few
almost a third.
Soldiers. Yeah,
yeah,
that's yeah.
So that's
especially
part of
when
why
you're registering at 25,000.
Yeah, but it wasn't like there were 500 dudes. There were still 10,000, although badly organized and very, you know, poorly coordinated,
sure.
Which is why ISIS
yeah,
managed
I
to
mean,
take the city.
Any organization that is stretching twice as far as it has people to support is probably going to be on shaky ground.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's why I never, ever go to the library.
That's right.
Fuck
not enough,
libraries.
Not enough librarians.
That's right.
I found out recently, this is a little bit of a non sequitur, but hey, why not? We're talking about ISIS. But
let's just get off this train as quick as possible.
That librarians fly. Do you know where the most librarians live?
Where?
Washington, D.C. Like,
that
like,
makes sense.
Yeah, but it's like, it's weird to think about a city as like, Washington, D.C. is to what is to librarians what like L.A. and New York is to actors.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know, you're
okay.
Like, I'm going to go swing at the big leagues. And
that makes sense because they're all like archival people, right? And that's where
that's
the
right.
archives of stuff are.
Yeah, yeah. That's
that
where
makes
all
sense.
The paper copy of everything is. It's just, yeah. I don't know, it's just funny. Just a swarm of librarians living in Washington, D.C.
Just all shushing each other.
Yeah. filming secret porn tapes.
You think that's what librarians are doing in their spare time?
That's most of what I know about librarians.
Well, that'll be in our newsletter coming
yeah,
out this week. Yeah. Okay. Final question. Devin asked, where does ISIS get like their supplies and their money from? And I said they captured a lot of it, which is true. They captured a lot of weapons when they captured Mosul, and they were also capturing weapons throughout their kind of big campaign when they kind of took a lot of territory. They got a lot of weapons and a lot of money. In
right.
Mosul, they seized almost $2 billion because they seized a bunch of central banks.
Whoa.
So that's they got a lot of money from that. Now obviously it's like 3 years later in a horrible war, so they've spent a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out here's an Explain It to Jamie exclusive. Arms companies aren't particularly discriminating against who they sell weapons to.
Really?
Did you know arms companies are actually a little bit unscrupulous? So
I
even though Russia and the United States are, you know, don't like ISIS and are fighting against them, there's thought that American and Russian arms companies don't have a super huge problem selling to ISIS if ISIS has the moolah. Or there's an outside chance that, you know, they're doing it through an intermediary, right? Somebody who's like, no, I'm just a Saudi prince. I represent Schmeisis. And they're like, that sounds legal. Right. And then they sell them a bunch of shit. So that happens too.
Well, there's just another example of our good, seldom caged lunatic friend capitalism.
Yeah, hey. So that's part of where they're getting their weapons from. They also are selling oil, right? They control oil reserves in the part of the territory they've controlled, and they're extracting it, and they're getting it into the market kind of through, again, intermediaries or something like, right, you know, right. they're selling oil there.
By calling themselves Schmeisis.
Schmeisis, yeah. Actually, I feel super humiliated because I bought a bunch of stock in Schmeisis, which I thought was a tech company that allowed you to use an app to find a... to squish mice. Oh, Jamie, aww. You look like I physically hurt him.
Just the sound of the bat hitting the air.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it feels great. Good and bad.
You know what? Actually, there's something because this, we're still new, guys. We're still within our first 10 episodes. We're still learning, growing, building. When we first started doing this podcast, one of my sort of concerns, and still is one of my concerns, is like what my role in this is, you know, is like I don't, and more and more I'm sort of realizing my role is to come at every topic from a point of not knowing whether I know things or not, you know, certainly not to be afraid to throw things in, but, you know, come to things from a point of not knowing, be welcome to change, as well as inject some jokes and funny and stuff in. And one thing I wanted to clarify about the ISIS episode is not so much this isn't clarifying. This is like the double dip, where I went and re-listened to the ISIS episode after we released it, and I was like, you know, when you listen to yourself, I was annoying myself, like listening to me engage in that topic. And one of the things that annoyed me was I felt like I could hear that I was uncomfortable. I could hear that I was reaching for jokes a lot, and I was committing to jokes that I didn't have confidence in, just for the sake of like trying to alleviate the tension. And I just wanted to point it out that even in a situation in which, you know, people are openly, actively trying to take in information and change and listen and grow, there is this edgy itchiness that I'm trying to alleviate by cutting tension and look over here for a second, please just look over here for a second. And so I just wanted to bring that up as like an example of the vastness of the hurdles that like we as a group in society need to overcome. Is just, you know, there's even just the discomfort of these topics is a mass in our way, let alone if you don't even have the interest to engage and learn and grow.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I just rambled for but I, you know, I just wanted to draw attention to the fact that I clearly felt uncomfortable, and somehow in saying it out loud, I go like, it's better for next time too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that there's a culture on the left of wanting to be accepting of things and validate people's identities. There's a culture of pluralism. There's a culture that even if I don't necessarily agree with the way of life, there probably should be a space for it in our society. And I think that can lead us to a default stance of going, I don't really know what this is about, but I'm just going to kind of nod along to it.
Yeah.
What's wonderful about learning about certain things is being able to say like, you know, like I have no problem with Muslim people, but like Salafism is bullshit. If you have a Salafist ideology, that's fucked up and you're wrong. Like that's really bad. I will fight you forever on that. Like, right. Don't do that, please. But you have to know enough about these things to be able to tell the difference between someone who's just like a normal human who has a religion and then like some, like, I want to start a caliphate and push a concrete block onto someone and crucify them in front of their family's house, like murder Stan. You know what I mean? Like, those are two super different things, but it can be hard until you learn, right? You can feel like you're criticizing one if you're criticizing the other. That's the whole point of this podcast, is to just for us both to learn a little bit about it.
Totally.
Cut through the bullshit. And then so that when we see all these things on our Facebook walls, we can be like, we can sort them out. You know what I mean?
Totally. And actually this is actually something maybe we could talk about. What's the term? Neutrality, normality, normalization. Something in which it's a big topic, but the idea that we curate our Facebook feeds and our Twitter feeds to receive the information that we'd like to receive.
Right. Yeah.
So like we are each building a media bubble around ourselves in which the people we hang out with have the same ideas as us. The media we take in is the same as the people around us. And then eventually you're exposed to someone who's vastly different.
Yeah.
And it feels so alien and wrong. And
it's super easy to get around that, by the way. Like, I know that after the idiotic Donald Trump election, a lot of people were like, we have to get outside our echo chambers, you know, like talk to somebody who's not like you.
Right.
And I have done that and have continued to do that. Like, and I didn't do it on Facebook, but I did do it on Twitter. I follow a lot of people I think are horrible people on Twitter to see what they're talking about.
Right.
I still think they were all wrong and bad.
Right.
But at least I understand. And some of them are sane.
Yeah.
Some of them are sane and some of them are legitimately insane. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And right now the problem is that a lot of insanity is winning out in the discourse. But anyway, all this to say, yes.
Yeah, change be good.
Yeah,
Momo be good. Talks. Yeah, anyway, I don't know why. I just feel like, you know, because my role in this podcast is maybe like a little more ethereal. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like, you know, I should be commenting on that.
Yeah.
As well. You know, for what I sort of learn about.
That's a good way to put it, man.
Myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Go back and listen to the ISIS episode.
Yeah.
I didn't hear at all what you're talking about when I listened back to it. So hey, if you think Jamie was being an insecure weirdo, you hit us with those comments.
Yeah, I think it's just because you can hear it in yourself. You know, you're like you don't laugh like that all the time. You're digging for something.
Right.
Know? Yeah. Anyway, I just listening to myself.
Anyway, that's our first ever double dip episode.
Double dip. We should make like a cool sound thing for double dip.
I think we just did. Okay. Hit us up anytime with comments, clarifications, things that you want us to hit, things that you want us to dip a second time.
Yeah.
And we'll make sure to include them in our next double dip episode.
Yes. Yes.
Until then, I've been Richard.
I'm Jamie. This is Explain It to Jamie. Bye.